Today on CyberWork, Tom Terenez joins me to discuss security in an industry that doesn't always make headlines for security news. I'm talking in this case about dentistry. Tom co-founded Medix Dental, an IT and security provider for the dental industry 20 years ago, and has the lowdown on some of the specific security issues that dentist offices and networks face, as well as the uphill battle of getting the industry to acknowledge its extreme insecurity at all. And I find out how a shared love of Hall & Oates got Tom into this very specific area of the security sphere. And I promise that I tried to avoid overusing the phrase drill down on this point. Spoiler alert, I failed. That's all today on CyberWork. Hey, welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, we talk with a different industry thought leader about cybersecurity trends, the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals while offering tips for breaking in or moving up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. My guest today, Tom Terenez, is a hands-on leader in the dental technology industry committed to helping practices reach their efficiency and IT security potential. Since founding two tech companies in the early 2000s, those being Medix Dental and TerroStar Interactive Media, he has become a nationally respected and increasingly sought-after expert in his field. His mission to help practices mitigate risk, protect patients, and maximize overall success has allowed dentists all over the country to embrace a new type of technology partner. And that was specifically why I wanted to talk to Tom today, is that we've certainly had a lot of healthcare security talk on here, but I was very curious to hear what some of the specific security issues around the dental industry are. So I'm looking forward to hearing about that. So Tom, thanks for joining me today and welcome to CyberWork.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for having me. I'm excited to have a conversation today.
That's great to hear. Yeah, me too. To help our listeners get to know you a little bit, I want to start out where I start out every episode and get a sense of where you first got interested in cybersecurity and tech. Was this like a childhood thing? Did you find it in high school or college? And what was it that got you excited about it?
It was kind of organic. I had an uncle that loaned me his Commodore 64 back when I was a young kid, and that got me started into technology. I kind of fell into dental. One of my good friend's mothers, who I shared a common love of Hall & Oates with, she was a two-location periodontal practice office manager. They were switching from a Mac-based software to PC-based software. We came in, the dental supply vendor was selling the computers. We saved doctor about $25,000 between the two locations. Realized there was a business opportunity there, and that was kind of our start into the dental space. And what, you know, as we've gotten more and more immersed in it, we started seeing what they needed, not just what they wanted. And cybersecurity was the first thing we noticed that was incredibly lacking. Yeah. And unfortunately, still is to a certain extent. But we were one of the first in the space to really make that a focus and start, you know, giving out CE on a national level for that continuing ed credits. But that was kind of how we got into it. And then, you know, it's just become a passion point, part of the industry, you know, that nobody really wants to acknowledge is there until something happens. And it's just one of those things that's always changing. So that's what keeps it interesting.
Yeah. No, that's I love that. And I love that that it started with a shared love of Hall & Oates as well. It's a nice, nice biographical detail. I didn't know I wanted it until I got it. So, you gave us a sense of why you sort of stepped into an opportunity that was there for you. Can you talk about I got to imagine there weren't that many other players in this space. Were there other companies that were servicing specifically dental IT and security concerns?
Not locally, not in our local market when we got started. You know, we went local, then regional, then national, and we've encountered more companies out there. And a lot of them don't just focus on dental. Some of them will have a fair amount of dental. Mm-hmm. But we find that a majority in the dental space are, you know, 20 employee or less IT companies that are doing dental. So it's interesting because we're much bigger than that. And there's only actually a few companies around our size in the industry that are fulfilling this niche.
I got to imagine with being the size that you are, that there's you know, especially with a larger dental practice, that they're going to say, well, let's go with the ones who, you know, clearly have the you know, the countrywide spread and so forth. So I want to talk a little bit about that and what you provide, because, you know, we've going back to almost the beginning of the show, we discussed news stories about the possibilities of IoT pacemakers being hacked and healthcare security and the sort of like big, scary, you know, all red, you know, 22 point type headlines and so forth. You know, but can you tell our listeners specifically about the types of security and tech issues that you help solve within the dental sector?
Well, one of the things that's interesting and slightly scary is that a majority of dental practices are still utilizing on-premise servers. Mm-hmm. And some of the software that's been around for a long time is so poorly built that it requires elevated security on the workstations for the software even to run. So thankfully, we've seen a trend in some of the practices and organizations finally moving to cloud. But by doing that, it's very challenging because you have a small area you're protecting in the dental, but it's extremely vulnerable. Whereas even you put the tools in place, you still have the human interaction, which is my biggest fear, because, you know, we have a lot of technical things in place, but with the limitations of the software, as well as knowing that the humans are interacting. In some cases, you have dental practices that are using their servers as an additional workstation. So you can imagine how much fun that that is. So
complete with its own Wi-Fi connection.
Please.
I've left the door open for you. I mean, I'm going to resist the urge to say, continue saying, drill down around an issue, but because, you know, no one needs that. But so I guess I wanted to sort of, I do want to drill down around about that, but so we're talking about like old systems here, right? These are things where like there's, you know, patch management's not even going to be a thing. Like you're probably working off of like, you know, 20 year old plus technology. Is that because you said you sort of need the sort of standalone external security because you can't really secure the stations as such? Is that one of the big problems that you see?
Sort of. Like, I mean, the software has been sort updated, but none of it has actually been rewritten significantly in 20 years. So you can imagine the baggage that comes with it.
Yeah.
Some use kind of proprietary database or small use database. They're not mainstream products. So the software itself, and honestly, one of the things that was most scary was that there was a shared password for some of these software vendors. If you knew that password, you got a hold of anybody's data, you could read it. So even though they encrypted it, it was a shared key that was available, you know, pretty easily online. So essentially, you're just trying to protect, put a frame around the practice and protect what's happening in there, because that's the vulnerability.
So is this something that it's like a default password for this particular piece of software, and you could realistically change the password and make it safer, but no one thinks to? Or is it deeper than that, where it's like you're just going to get into this sort of vendors, you know, space and sort of travel through to the various?
Well, without speaking, you know, specifically about soft certain package, because but there was one at one point where it was just a singular password across everyone. That was the encryption key. It was a password.
Okay.
I mean, that was, if you knew that, you know, you could see it through the course of support, pick that up and realize that you had the keys to the castle if you were able to get your hands on any of the data. And there were torrents found with copies of these databases. So that was one, but they've since made some changes to allow you to, you know, change your encryption key, change a master password. But also, you know, in the past, there's a lot of these instances that were set up that were just kind of set up one way and have never changed those passwords. Yeah,
left to sit there because it works fine on our end and there's no real need to change it. And, you know, like everything else, people are overworked and don't need to be having to learn a new thing every 10 minutes or whatever. So I think I know the answer to this, but what is the sort of target? What is the bounty that criminals are looking for in dental fields? I'm assuming it's PII, but are they looking for specific aspects of it? Like what are some of the usual attack vectors? Is it ransomware? Is it
ransomware data?
A lot of that. Okay.
Ransomware and data exfiltration have been the two. But the thing that I find most uncomfortable about it is there's a lot of practices and IT providers that have had these experiences, but have not documented it, have not actually followed the legal channels of disclosing it to the federal, and in some cases, the state needs to be reported to as well. So there's a lot of information out there. And it's just because, you know, you look at if your practices are being supported by a small IT group, their first and foremost job is to support you. They're not able to invest in the back end, the centralized services, the security mm-hmm. services, the SOC, mm-hmm. things like that, that, you know, larger companies can do. So just having the data being, you know, gone and or ransomed, they pay the ransom, but they don't know if it's been exfiltrated because they don't have the tools in place to even know if it's been, you know, pulled out of there. So that's, I mean, that's just talking about the systems they have. Another common thing is passwords, you know, the same passwords being used. Mm-hmm. And probably one of the more scary things is that even the cloud-based versions of these dental softwares that hold a ton of PII, mm-hmm. some of them don't even support MFA or 2FA yet.
Wow. And is that, I mean, those are softwares that are specific to sort of dentistry or? Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So I'm wondering, because I know that you do security, but you also sort of cover IT and you sort of take care of the tech around this. Is there a lot of, do you make a lot of recommendations of like, you really have to get rid of this old thing and we need to sort of update it to something that's a little more, or are you really having to just keep building sort of external security setups because that one thing just can't go away? I mean, I don't have a sense of whether or not, like, even, you know, uprooting like however many decades of records from this old piece of software into like a new one, if that's even feasible or not.
It is, you know, if you look at the history of how we've operated, we've tried to educate for a long time. Mm-hmm. And even with that, the uptake on the education and actually participating has been really low. And we've made security suggestions several times over the years to practice. And most of the time it compromised efficiency, so they didn't want to take the steps. Right. So what we've realized is that we can't really change how the practices operate. We just can't seem to change that. But we still are in charge of protecting their data to a certain extent. So what we've done is we've kind of aligned with some of what I call the leading cloud software providers that take security seriously. Okay. And so with those, we try to move into those products because it's, you know, it's, we can't get the practices to lock down to the point that I feel that they're 100% fail safe. So
sleep a little easier. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, and plus if you look at, you know, majority of the dentistry is way behind on leveraging cloud technologies. So been our strategy in addition to putting this, if they're still going to use on-premise or hosted, we'll just put as many tools as we can in place, layers to try to mitigate the user mistakes, you know.
Yeah. Now, without, you know, drawing, you know, painting with a broad brush or whatever, like when companies are contacting, I mean, I'm assuming a lot of them contact you. I don't know how much outreach you do as well, but like what specific problems are they often coming looking for? Are they frequently saying, I have been breached, I need to deal with security? Or is it more like, I heard about, you know, XYZ, I should probably do this before something bad happens? Like, is there a sense of like, I guess I'm trying to figure out whether the dental sector is even sort of aware of its big problems or not, or whether it's sort of like finding out the hard way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard to say. Honestly, a lot of people don't come to us with the security as their first need. Mm-hmm. Something else. A lot of times it's like, hey, we use this IT company for 10 years and we continue to grow, but we feel like we've kind of outgrown them.
I see.
In some cases, though, when we do our first discovery phase with them, we find very serious security concerns. And unfortunately that's been more of the trend than.
Okay.
And another part that's tough is because I consider dental fairly unsophisticated, like mm-hmm. Even the dental organizations unsophisticated with cybersecurity. There is a company in the dental space that touts cybersecurity, but really is not offering what I consider true cybersecurity. So it creates a false sense of competence. You engage with this company and you're safer, which, from my perspective, you're not. You know, if you're working mm-hmm. with a good IT provider that's and a cybersecurity partner, or one that's kind of, you know, have segments the two, because the roles in my mind are different.
Right.
You know, that's the better strategy, but it is a pretty big concern. And we did a data study here before the pandemic, and I mean, we sampled a few hundred dental practices, and a lot of them were missing firewalls. They're using just the internet modems, you know, with no password changes in years, with, you know, people that had been high risk terminations. I mean, there's just so many things that we've uncovered, you know, and all we can do is we can do the best we can with our clients, but we've been trying to push the message and make it a priority. It just depends on where it sits, but moving people to the cloud has been something we can get people to do. And it has an impact on, you know, reducing their surface.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder if do you have a sense of maybe that's because, you know, we hear so much about healthcare security and, you know, IoT hacking and you know, hospitals being ransomware. Like there's that ambient sense that like, this isn't safe. We need to do something about this. Whereas this is literally the first I've heard about, you know, I've even like given a thought to like dental security. Do you think that some of the laxness on the part of the industry as a quote unquote whole is sort of stemming from the fact that you don't really, like you said, they don't report on it, self-report and whatever, is that it's assumed that maybe they're not coming for us?
Well, you know, yeah. So my thing is the bad guys go for big targets or low hanging fruit, and dental definitely falls under low hanging fruit.
Yep.
I do feel that the tone has changed based on some recent incidents. A large dental organization, I won't mention one here, but you can Google and figure this out. They had a very significant incident, affected multiple systems. They're a national company. And then a big dental supplier also had a severe incident. And both of them, as from what I understand, are still not 100%. In some cases, one of them had been re-encrypted and shut down. And actually the bad guys or the hackers, if you will, whatever you want to call them, provided copies of the emails of their cybersecurity report from the vendor who they'd hired to mitigate the attack. So it's like, you know, but practices got to see some impact from that because they couldn't make their traditional orders. They couldn't do the things. So I think my hope is that it's taken more seriously moving forward, and people really understand, you know, and some people think, okay, if I have a security incident of a dental practice, people are upset, you know, do what I'm supposed to do. It's still very expensive. That's what supposedly they have insurance for. Mm-hmm. But the other part of that is, you know, the local reputation. If your patients are uncomfortable, they don't trust you. I mean, they trust you with their oral care, but they're also entrusting you with personal information.
Yeah, they'll trust a lot of different local places with their oral care. But if one of them has this big red mark on their record, then maybe they call you second or third.
Yeah, but then that kind of leads to another challenge in the industry with cybersecurity insurance. Is, you know, it's kind of the Wild West. Nobody really knows differences. A lot of them don't understand, you know, what they need or what they don't. The flip side is a lot of them don't know how to answer those applications. So unless they get their IT provider involved, we've had some cases where somebody gave us a copy of their application to review. And I was like, if you would have turned that in and had an incident, they would have found ways to just not pay the claim because it's not honest. And so that's another fear I have. That's beyond it, because I think that happens a lot. People want to check these boxes, but if the insurance companies find that the source of the breach is through something that they were not honest about, you have no coverage.
Yes,
and that's serious.
Well, speaking of where breaches come through, I wanted to get a sense of like some of the common attack vectors with dental practices. I'm assuming that phishing and social engineering is sort of a common attack vector. Are there any other sort of common, because you, like you said, there's these practices that are flying about as unprotected as you can with no firewalls, no, you know, just running off a modem, or, you know, they're, you know, using their data backup as their, you know, primary workstation or whatever. Like, what are some of the common attack vectors? And also, I guess that's about it. So let's start with that.
Well, I think you hit the two most common ones on that: social engineering and phishing. They're extremely vulnerable to that.
Right.
By default, they're trusting somebody calls needs to do something.
I guess that's what I was going to ask was, I forgot it for a second there, but what are there particular phishing campaign, like what are some things that they seem to like fall, that, you know, that falls through? Are attackers using dental specific things, you know, here's an invoice from your superior, or so-and-so needs to reschedule, click this thing, or are they really still just being hit the same click here for a free pizza, click here to unsubscribe from your Hulu or whatever?
Yeah, it's pretty much the general stuff because, okay, you know, there's not a lot, and there's been some cases where we've been made aware of some spear phishing in the dental organizations and dental groups, but everything, a lot of the methodologies that we've witnessed, thankfully, you know, our clients have been pretty well protected, not experienced that. But, you know, what we've witnessed and what they've shared is that, you know, just kind of the general phishing stuff, UPS, FedEx, okay, banks, mm-hmm, those kind of things, the easy ones.
Yeah. Is there any particular taste for security awareness, sort of educate, like when these things happen, do you see people rolling in afterwards and being sort of educating the, you know, the receptionists and the people on duty about like, hey, don't click this thing, don't click that thing, or does it go straight to the hardware?
You know, we haven't seen a lot of upticks after things have happened, like as far as inquiries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if a practice witnesses something, we, you know, first try to understand whether they clicked it or not. Mm-hmm. And if we don't trust that they're being honest that they didn't click it, then we do, you know, do a deep dive to try to make sure nothing happened. But, you know, it's still one of those things that I still feel a lot of people think it won't happen to them. Even if it happened to another group, they just don't think it could happen to them. And, you know, back a handful of years ago, there was two incidents with two dental service IT providers that through non-MFA protected remote access software, they were able to hit, I don't remember the exact number, but several hundred dental practices and encrypt them. And then I actually spoke to Brian Krebs about that because he did an article on it and interviewed me, and we were talking about just some of the things. And I was like, I hope seeing this changes the behaviors, changes the priority of it. And honestly, it was like made some noise for a little bit and it didn't. So,
yeah,
I try to be optimistic, but I'm not, you know.
So you mentioned coming in and sort of talking to, you know, about what happened and whether they, you know, documented. Does your company sort of provide incident response work as well then? Or are you just asking them in sense of like what's happened in the past? Here's what we have for you.
So we do some consulting too with groups that are acquiring practices and things. So that's one of the things that I made sure is part of diligence. Like you ask these questions and if they are fault, you know, if we discover something afterwards, then you have some recourse if they weren't honest. But it's one of those things that we've just heard about through other insiders in the industry, not with our clients, of course, but where we've heard of a scenario where they had ransomware and, you know, they were told that they were going to pull the data. They didn't pay the ransom. They said they pulled the data. They didn't really know if it was distributed, but it never got disclosed. And mm-hmm. I've heard at least 25, 30 stories like that. Yeah. So if you know, if you're hearing those stories, you could always check the HIPAA wall of shame because that's where it'll show up at. And if I don't see them eventually popping up there, then I know that they didn't disclose it. And so there's probably several more out there that have had these incidents and weren't guided the right way to handle them.
Yeah. We could go down that rabbit hole and trying to sort of pull things back or not, you know, for another hour, but I want to pivot this into people who are joining the industry now, trying to get into cybersecurity, changing to cyber from other roles, and specifically people who maybe are in the dental sector now who maybe want to work in something like this. I think, you know, knowing the industry up front is probably a really good springboard if you wanted to sort of do this type of work. Do you have any suggestions of certain must do activities, must have certs, must have skill sets that would put you on the radar of potential employers, or if you're being like a freelancer like this, that would make you desirable to a dental practice that would want to, you know, you to help them?
Yeah, I mean the certifications obviously are extremely beneficial. It means you've done the work. The hard thing is that with the techniques changing so often, when we're looking for people, it's more of the acumen and the interest, because if they mm-hmm. have a good enough understanding and have an interest, they will invest in, you know, deepening your skill set for it. I think a lot of people that come into dental from even healthcare or other industries and look at cybersecurity, they are appalled and caught off guard. And in some cases, yeah. they realize that the companies that they're working for don't have the budgets to take a lot of action, which is kind of like, why have a CISO if you without a budget to do anything, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's hard. It's like you pretty much assume when you're coming into dental, a lot needs to be done.
Yes. Okay. Well, so, that was going to be my next question is, you're sort of answering it right now, but are there specific aspects of the dental industry that would be cyber pros who want to go into this area should be aware of when researching jobs? Like, you know, like you said, I want to see if there's sort of like a profile or something that you can sort of, we can sort of fit together, you know, like what you said that, you know, budget's obviously going to be a problem, but where do you see like new pros being able to enter the industry and make an impact even when there's compromised budgets like that?
Well, I mean, I think just helping the organization, even if they don't have the ability to do a ton of mitigation right away, but having that skill set to be able to give them a holistic picture and then translate it to non-technical English, you know, for leadership so that they truly understand.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge value in that. I mean, me being a vendor, and even though I've done it so long and I've had a lot of involvement in people trust, it's still like, they're kind of like, oh, you just want more money. Like, I will talk about this and guide my competitors too. Like, I want the industry to tighten things down. I want to protect the practices. I want to protect the patients. Yeah. That's my ultimate goal. But anybody that comes over, you know, it's an uphill climb because it's not given the priority it needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
as a whole.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, sort of going further down into like a very personal thing like that, if you're really just getting started and you want to kind of make your name in this area, are there sort of security volunteer opportunities you could do with like your local dental? You know, I'm always talking to ICS practitioners about volunteering with your state and local municipalities to, you know, help secure, you know, local infrastructure and things like that. Do you see sort of if you have like a two-person dental office in your, you know, in your town and you can say, look, I have this skill set and background, I'll do this for free to get experience. Is that something that you think is viable or do you think most of them are going to resist something like that?
I think that might be tough because one, you got the compliance standpoint. So if they touch any of the systems, they have to understand that they have to sign a business associate agreement,
yes.
take on the responsibility. The other side is when you're working with a lot of the dental practices that use the small IT companies, a lot of them, and I'm not saying there's always exceptions, just like there's exceptions to dental groups and practices that are really focused on cybersecurity. But the smaller IT groups are very territorial and very like, because they know they're probably not doing a great job, they don't want anybody to look under the hood. Mm-hmm. So we've encountered that more times than not. So if somebody comes in a volunteer opportunity, like, hey, we want to evaluate, even if it's somebody that the doctor knows well, they're going to probably hit resistance with IT companies. So, but it would be a good experience. And honestly, you could probably take Kali Linux into any dental practice that's, you know, with a poor IT partner and really scare the bejeebers out of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. It's the hands-on thing is going to get you the client
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
So as we're starting the new year here, Tom, do you see any particular security trends for the industry in 2024 in terms of differing attack vector cybercrime trends, or if it's just going to be kind of business as usual? Do you see anything rising up or tools?
I don't see anything new. You know, it's the same. You know, the individual practices are vulnerable in a lot of cases. The bigger organizations that are not leveraging a cloud-based platform, a good cloud-based platform. As far as like the attack methodologies, I haven't seen anything new-ish. You know, the trends are just different. Mm-hmm. And I think like some of the bigger incidents in the dental industry have all been related to unsupported operating systems that were based on it. Like that large dental vendor had a lot of that. And I'm sure the other one did as well. So they're extremely vulnerable.
you know, you put
a lot of tools in there, but they're just open holes. So my whole thing is educating the staff, educating the frontline, making sure they are aware. And so that's kind of what our thing is. You know, we try to make a very, very tailored educational component to what they do.
You know, okay. Yeah. Tell me about that.
So you know, we know what area, what types of things they're doing. They're hopping between email, websites, and the software. And so we tried to make them, one, understand which email, what things to look out for on the email, what not to click. My whole thing is if you have any doubt, don't click.
Yes.
And if you do and something weird's happening, shut it down. Yeah, we have some, like if it's one of our clients, we have a tool that in place that if they send, we have like one, a bunch of honeypots on the machine. So if a file changes in one of the honeypots, it just shuts the machine down. But so that's kind of the starting point because email tends to be the biggest vulnerability. And then we talk about websites, password hygiene, which you would think that hygiene being a thing in dental, they would understand the terminology.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
But we'll still get passwords and we'll be like, why are all those dentists 123, or big, you know, big smiles or teeth 32. Right. I mean, you can almost predict and so kind of funny thing is some of our competitors use the same passwords. So we're taking over a client. We can go in and have admin access because we know the passwords or we know how they generate their passwords. But but starting with the staff, that's whatever we can do to provide that. And it's not the traditional like know before stuff. It's just helping them understand in their job, what are the things they need to be paying attention to and then refreshing that on a regular basis.
Yeah. I mean, if you never have been told this before, like, how would you know, you know, not part of the training, you know, as a standard default, especially if you've been there for 30 years. So as we wrap up today, Tom, could you tell our listeners the best piece of career advice you ever received?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. You know, one of the things that I had a mentor who's passed away, incredible person, incredibly successful. And what he always said is the things about business that are most difficult are the things you can't control. Mm. So don't focus on those. Yes. Focus on everything else. And that's kind of how I developed my leadership style. And also, you know, when I'm looking at opportunities, you know, we're selective. We fire clients and not because we want to, but if we don't feel we can deliver what we want to for them.
Yeah.
And I think if you want to kind of pull out something, be comfortable saying no to an opportunity if you don't feel it's ideal, whether you're looking at a new job or a new client, get comfortable with that. And I think, you know, a lot of people are like, well, we're just trying to grow and try to get, but there's a cost to the wrong fit. And that can be very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice. And as you said, it's extremely difficult to take to heart when you're scrabbling for every single client you can possibly get. And then you have to say, oh, this one is just going to make things worse.
Well, that's the one thing if you asked me what I would have told myself, you know, 15 years ago, say no when you see red flags.
Right. So we've been discussing Medix Dental a bit at the top of the show and throughout here. But if you'd like to tell us more about the services you offer, please, you can feel free to do so here.
Sure. So, you know, our stack is the traditional managed services, national field service, project support, anything related to IT and dentistry. We have the security advisory on top of that. But then we also do a fair amount of like strategy, whereas, you know, if a group's growing or making acquisitions, we assist with due diligence, fractional roles, placement. And we found that just through some of these, we've created more offerings and we'll be having some more offerings from that. We're just kind of we just flow into where we need to be and then create offerings based on that. And if you're familiar with dental, there's a lot of consolidation happening that's accelerated through the pandemic. So there's just new challenges out there. And that's about as concise as I can get.
All right. Well, then I got one last question for you. If our listeners want to learn more about you, Tom Ternes, or Medix Dental, where should they look online?
MedixDental.com
MedixDental.com. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Tom. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. It was a lot of fun.
My pleasure. And thank you to our 80,000 plus Cyborg viewers and subscribers. Your input and enthusiasm make this a joy to do each week. So if you have any topics you would like us to cover or guests you'd like to see on the show, always feel free to drop them in the comments below. We've started using our community function on YouTube, so feel free to jump in there and tell us what you think. Before I let you go, I hope you'll remember to visit InfoSecInstitute.com/free to get a whole bunch of free and exclusive stuff for CyberWorks listeners, including our new security awareness video training series, Work Bites, which is just awesome and hilarious. I hope you watch the trailer for that. It is also the place to go for your free cybersecurity talent development ebook, where you'll find in-depth training plans for the 12 most common security roles, including SOC analyst, pen tester, cloud security engineer, information risk analyst, privacy manager, secure coder, and more. One more time, infosecinstitute.com/free. And yes, the link is in the description. Thank you once again to Tom Ternes and Medix Dental. And thank you all so much for watching and listening. So until next week, have a great week and happy learning. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses, all free for CyberWorks listeners. Go to infosecinstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.